This is Bowen Yang.
And Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers.
And Bowen Yang.
JBL wireless earbuds are for those who are the first to try something unique. The first wireless earbuds on the market with a touchscreen case, which allows you to control your audio without reaching for your phone. They also have a touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control. I love being able to touch my buds and control the volume. With a built-in wireless transmitter that lets you plug and play with any device you want, JBL wireless earbuds connects you to all your favorite music, movies, and games. JBL wireless earbuds. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
Okay, only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first, there, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
Fast, thrilling, and more sustainable racing. That's what the exciting new era of Formula One will look like from 2026. With new power units, advanced sustainable fuels, and different challenges for the drivers.
That's different, but it's great. The fuel story is amazing. You can see how ecstatic an engineer almost gets when you look at Howell.
That is an incredible project. A just phenomenal project. Complete step into the unknown. That's one of those ones where the regulators have gone, do that. I know it doesn't exist. I know it sounds impossible, but do that. Thank you very much, F1 Sport. We'll take the benefit of that because you're making something incredible.
Rumours in the paddock suggest Mercedes will be the team to beat. So how confident are they?
Never confident. We are glass half empty people, never half full. You can't take anything for granted, even if the Mercedes power unit was the strongest.
Quite frankly, I don't know how much power we're going to get to the first race, so God knows how the rest of the paddock knows what we're getting there.
These rumour mills are always dangerous. We are not being carried away by any gossip that's been discussed at the hairdresser.
Hello and welcome to F1 Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson. Now the thrilling 2025 season has ended, full focus switches to 2026 for one of the biggest rule changes in the history of Formula One. Always raising the bar for innovation and technology, F1 has gone through different rule cycles throughout the last 75 years. But with new car and new engine regulations arriving at the same time in 2026, there's even more anticipation this time around. Mercedes team principal Toto Wolff and managing director of Mercedes AMG High Performance Powertrains, Hal Thomas, are working incredibly hard to make sure the team can compete once again for world titles in this new era. Toto and Hal provide a fascinating breakdown of exactly what we can expect from the new power units and advanced sustainable fuels. What demands will the new regs place on the drivers and teams? How will they impact the competitive order? And what could Mercedes achieve with George Russell and Kimi Antonelli in the coming years? Very warm welcome to you both. It's the end of a long season. 24 races. How are you both feeling?
Personally, I'm looking forward to the end of the season. This is the last season that we're going to be racing this PU. We've been doing it since 2014, and she's going into retirement, and I'm looking forward to that because we've got a new challenge to look forward to beyond that.
Well, if I've got my maths right, it's 40-odd days until the 26 cars hit the racetrack in Barcelona. It's going to be a busy winter, short winter too.
I think for everyone involved in definitely in the PU side and an awful lot in the chassis side as well, I should think there isn't a winter this year. We'll be testing straight after this event, and then, as you say, you know, before the end of January, we're out on the circuits with the new cars. So, crikey, there's no rest for the wicked, is there?
And there's going to be a lot of you two being together over the winter. I mean, like Christmas lunch together. Is that what we're looking at?
We are emotionally and philosophically always together since many years. Because Howard is doing such a great job over there. Whenever there is hiccups appearing and the power unit is an extremely complex issue, I know that Howard is solving these like he's always done. So our relationship, we're speaking to each other, but it's more informative Matt Howell doesn't need my help.
To be clear, I'm not fixing those problems.
His team.
The team's fixing the problems, and they're a great team.
Look, I want to drill down into the new regs that are coming in 2026. But before we do that, can we just doff our caps to the season just gone? I mean, Toto, starting with you, how do you look back on 2025?
I think when we will be looking back in 10 or in 20 years and look at the pure stats, you can see that the last 15 years were really good because we won 8 consecutive championships. And then the following 4 was, it was P3, P2, P4, hopefully P2. And that looks solid and respectable. But obviously, it hides the fact that in each of those years, there was another team that was pretty dominant. So there was, we were never the one who were fighting for the championship. And that is a little bit unfortunate, and we suffer from that, from a competitive mindset, but it is what it is. And I would say I would rank this season like some of the previous ones in respectable. We've won some races, many podiums, pole positions, and fundamentally fighting for a P2 in the Formula One World Championship, which is the pinnacle of motor racing. So that's how I would summarize it. We aren't depressed. We aren't exuberant either. It's something in the middle. But this is the most formidable motor racing competition against the most formidable teams. And I think over the last, like I said, we've done a solid job.
Niki Lauda always used to say, you learn more when you lose. Okay, P2's been, as you say, a respectable season. What have been the biggest things you've learnt in 25?
The power unit's also been respectable. We've won more races because of the customer relationship that we have with McLaren. It does mean that as a constructor, we've won a world championship.
Can I interrupt you there, Howell, and just say, how much pleasure do you take from a McLaren-Mercedes world championship?
I think what isn't always visible to people is just how much the Mercedes PU is part of the overall Mercedes F1 entity. You know, we are wholly owned by Mercedes. We exist to do one thing, and that's to win world championships with Mercedes. That's what we talk about forever at the factory. You know, of course, we say it's better to have won that championship than not, but we are absolutely part of the Mercedes team. That's why I'm sat here in Mercedes kit. That's why I sit in the Mercedes garage. And it's why the relationships with the engineering group in Brackley are so strong.
Can you just clarify, are the power units that you give to all of the customer teams identical to the ones being used by the works team?
Yep, they are. They're completely identical. So we design one power unit. We design that with our colleagues in Brackley to make sure that it fits the Brackley car perfectly. And then the customers are invited to take the same power unit.
So I guess this begs the question, what does a works team look like these days, Toto?
You know, I think you need to do one step back. Raison d'être for HPP is to win world championships with the works team. You know, this is Mercedes. But in order to make the economies work and also to use it as a test bench and a comparison to the works team, it's good that we have the customer supply situation. And there will always be a part of Howell and I think HPP that is allowed to cheer for their power unit to have won a championship. And it's the mindset that, you know, we always had is this power unit has won a Constructors World Championship. That means our car wasn't good enough to beat McLaren. And that's the sheer simple fact. So for us being able to benchmark ourselves, you can at least take the power unit out of the equation. You know, that's the thing that is good enough to win a championship. So on the chassis side, we haven't done that. And in that respect, there's many reasons why we do have these relationships with Williams and with McLaren, Aston Martin this year and Alpine next year to kind of benefit from the faster development, fault fixes, like I mentioned, the investment from the Mercedes group. But we are here. Mercedes gives us this opportunity to decorate the most important shopping window to make the works team win. Nobody else is interested in some kind of customer success outside of our little microcosmos. It is the Mercedes team. And then there is the McLaren team. And then there is the Williams team. And that's something that we always bear in mind.
One last thing on 25. Can we just talk about the drivers? George Russell said in Abu Dhabi that it's been his best season in Formula One. Do you agree with him?
I think he was very strong. Difficult summer, I guess, with all the rumors, and he was able still to, you know, shine. He ranks among the best in the sport. I haven't seen many weaknesses this year, to be honest, and his growth has been impressive to see. So if he says that, I would probably agree to it.
You talk about his growth. Have you been impressed by the way he's led the team?
We had 2,500 people between Brixworth and Brackley. 2,500 superstars, not one. And there's not one leading, or there's not five leading, and it's not Howard or me leading or any driver. It's just a collective effort. And the driver is the kind of last line of attack, the most visible one. And he has definitely contributed to the success of this team, contributed to how we have all been able to win races and have pole positions and hopefully P2 in the world championships.
Is he good technically, Hal?
Yeah, he is. He is good technically. And I think one of, just perhaps following up a little bit on that, I think when you say, has he impressed as a leader, to be honest with you, the impressive thing is that I don't think he's changed that much. You know, I think he's always been challenging. He's always wanted the best out of the PU. He's always wanted the best out of the car. And the, I think there was, I was a bit worried coming into this year that he might actually change his approach a little bit to say, oh, I'm the leader now. I've got to do something different. I need to do more. I've got to do it differently. Actually, the fact that he stayed pretty similar, I think is probably one of the greatest things that he's done this year.
He's a natural leader.
Yeah, and he's a very natural character. You know, that's who he is. And he's a fun guy to be around.
This episode is sponsored by Truework. Autumn weather's got a mind of its own, hasn't it? One minute it's crisp and clear, the next it's pouring. And if you're working on a job site, you feel every bit of it. The wrong gear can make the day twice as hard. That's why Truework exists. They make performance workwear that's built to handle it all. Hot, cold, wet, windy, and they don't just talk the talk. Every piece is tested by real trade professionals out on real job sites, indoors and out. The brand was founded by someone who knows the reality of physical work, how uncomfortable it is when your gear is heavy, soaked, or gets in the way. So they set to fix it, from technical pants to base layers and work shirts, to insulated outerwear like hoodies and jackets. It's all designed with the job in mind. I've got the M3 Wubby hoodie and the T2 work pant. And while I'm not on a job site myself, I've been seriously impressed by how warm and durable they are. The hoodie is super comfortable and properly insulated, and the work pant is water resistant and flexible enough that they can move with you. And if you work in a trade, you'll know exactly how much that matters. So upgrade your day with workwear built like it matters. Get 15% off your first order at truework.com with the code GRID. That's true, T-R-U-E, work, W-E-R-K.com. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. Putting this show together each week takes a great team, and I'm lucky to work with some brilliant people behind the scenes. But when you're hiring, especially for your business, you don't just want someone who ticks a few boxes. You need the right person with the right skills, and you often need them fast. Indeed streamlines your hiring process so you can focus on what matters most, building a great team. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out by putting your listings in front of candidates with the skills and experience you're actually looking for, which means you're not wading through a pile of maybes. You're finding people who are ready to make an impact from day one. And it works. According to their data, jobs sponsored directly on Indeed are 90% more likely to result in a hire than those that aren't. There's no long-term contract or monthly subscription, just a smart, efficient way to connect with the right talent. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/grid. Just go to Indeed.com/grid right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/grid. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed. Right, that's George. What about Kimi? It seemed like a season of two halves for him. In what areas do you feel he's grown the most?
I would say it's almost been a game of three thirds. because he came into the team, and of course in those early races you're like, wow, this is incredible that this guy with such little experience is really putting it out there. Then he had his blip, and the results weren't there, and now he's come back super strong. Really impressive. And to think, you know, he's the age that he is, and he's dealing with it all, and he's very intelligent, he deals with people really, really well, and very, very mature. You know, I've got kids his age, and they're not that mature. I can tell you that for nothing. They wouldn't like to hear that, but they're not.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Do you agree with how split it into thirds?
The thing is that when we speak with Kimi, you know, we are brutally honest when it's good and when it's bad, and then you remind yourself that you're not sitting opposite an adult. Kim is more a kid than an adult. You have to remind yourself that he's just 19. Yes, he's a pro in the car and he's been karting all his life and racing all his life. But from the maturity, we're expecting an acceleration of growth that is almost too difficult. You know, he's been thrown into this. And I think when you look at some of the worst races, it's just overwhelming, I think, the experience that he's making with all of the interest, the media pressure, they're writing you up and down. You have an extremely quick and experienced teammate. And he's still coping. And I think that shows that he has great potential for the future. Because like Howard says, I mean, when I was 19, I was a bit of an idiot. I wouldn't have been able to cope with the pressures that he is. And that's why when I talk to him, I'm a little bit harsh with him. I need to almost take myself back and say, hold on a minute, you know, he's a kid. And that's quite an interesting learning for us also.
Was your relationship with him this year paternal?
No, paternal is the wrong word. He has a dad and a great dad. Super support from all of the family. They're typically Italian family that they, you know, they stick together like glue. The mother is fantastic. So he doesn't need any parent because the parent is here. I think what I need to be is to look after him here when he's within the racing team, protect him from some of the missteps that he potentially could do or did, guide, put my arm around his shoulder when things are difficult, but also be open and honest when things are not running well without ever giving him the feeling that this is a high and fire institution that we are. Some of the other teams have been like that in the past. And we've always said, you know, this is a development year. So my role is, you know, I'm running Mercedes. I'm responsible for this brand in Formula One and for the many people that work for it. So I need to extract the best out of him in order for him to be successful in the car, whilst always having an eye on him and considering that he's very young, he's a teenager.
How important was it to get him in the car, get this debut season out the way before the reg changes in 26?
I think what we know and what we've seen in the simulators is that next year is going to be different driving than this year. There's a lot to take in. There's a lot of new stuff to do. So I think it would be extraordinarily difficult for someone to step into that as their first year. So I'm pleased that he's done a year this year, definitely. Pleased that he's knows the team, is part of the team. You know, he's been up to Brixworth plenty of times. We've been going through all the technical stuff that's going to be changing. He's having his input in there. So yeah, I'm super pleased that he's been racing this year.
Let's talk tech then. The 2026 reg changes. Everyone's saying it's huge. Is it as big a change as 2013 to 2014?
I think in the hardware, probably not as huge as that change. You know, when I remember back to when we were first talking about those regulations, sort of 2012, 2013 time, you looked at it and you thought, oh my God, there's stuff in here that we're genuinely inventing. That electric turbo, you know, running an electric motor at over 100,000 RPM, and these things just didn't exist. And we were having to invent that stuff. That was a real, you know, what a push and what an incredible project that was. Plenty of dips in the road, but that was incredibly difficult from a hardware point of view. I think from this 26 regulation set, sort of any element within it, you can take a battery, you know, we can take the electric motor, 350 kilowatts, they exist. Okay, they don't exist in an F1 framework. They don't exist in the right size, the right shape, but they do exist. So in that way, this regulation set doesn't feel as big. But what it's going to definitely changed with this regulation set is the interaction with the driver. Because of the electrical aspects of it, we are generally going to be slightly energy limited. So it's going to be working with the driver to make sure they've got the right energy at the right time to defend, to attack, to go as quickly as they can. And it's definitely going to need some real thought from the driver and from the engineers around them to understand how to go racing and how to do this the right way. And I think that is a bigger challenge than the one we faced in the similar area in sort of 13, 14.
So a lot of interaction between race engineer and driver during the races?
Potentially during the races, but definitely beforehand. You know, far more than we have now. And we already think, crikey, we got these guys coming in regularly and really talking to us. This is great. But I think for next year, it's going to be even more and more the link between the power unit, the energy, the car. I mean, the whole thing's so new. The way that that's all put together is there's going to be tens of lap time in that.
How is the increase in the electrical side of the power unit going to affect performance? Are we going to see much greater torque?
I think the sort of start of straight performance is going to be very, very similar today. What we kind of potentially could be gaining from the electrical torque, that of course is the other thing part of that is we've got the turbocharger that hasn't got an electric machine on it anymore, so you could get some turbo lag, and so we'll be filling in that turbo lag with the electric potentially. So I think in terms of sort of start straight, the performance is going to be pretty epic in comparison to what we've got today. But we know we're going to start to derate earlier on the straight, because we haven't got enough electrical energy to use it all the time.
What about the sustainable fuel? How much of a step into the unknown is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the when I said we weren't really inventing stuff, I kind of meant at Brixworth, because that is an incredible project. Just phenomenal project. Complete step into the unknown. That's one of those ones where the regulators have gone, yeah, do that. I know it doesn't exist. I know it sounds impossible, but do that. Thank you very much, F1 Sport. we'll take the benefit of that, because you're making something incredible.
Is the fuel going to be a performance differentiator? I mean, Toto, I don't know if you remember, back in the day, I remember some of the smell of the fuel that was used 25 years ago in the pit lane. It was incredible. And there was a huge amount of performance in that.
I think it could well be, especially perhaps in the early days, there could be performance in that. I think everyone will probably get to a similar stage at some point. I don't know if that's going to be before the first race or when that will be. An interesting thing that I'm not sure is also realised is put the fact that it has to be sustainable to one side. The fuel regulations have actually changed more this year than probably they have in the last 25. So it's an all new formulation. And then just add on top of that, it's got to be sustainable. It's, you know, you have to... all the fuel companies, you're going to have to lift your hat to them, Petronas.
For all the techie people watching and listening to this, just how different are the fuel regs? Can you give us some octane numbers? And
I can't off the top of my head, but okay. What they've done is put more constraints on the fuel, really, to make it far more based on a pump fuel. So there is the octane numbers. There are some other items that are far closer to a road car fuel. So some things we got away with in the past, we can't really get away with anymore.
Toto, it's rare for Formula One to change chassis, fuel and power unit all at the same time. Are you expecting a very different Formula One in 26?
I think fundamentally it's going to land in a place where we are going to say that's different, but it's great. You know, the fuel story is amazing. You can see how ecstatic an engineer almost gets when you look at Howell. And with Petronas, we have a great partner, and they are excited about it as much as they, you know, look at it and say, blimey, hopefully this works. So we have this fuel that hopefully will make it in the road cars. Because if you can demonstrate that in Formula One, the Formula One car, the fastest car on the planet, is fueled by sustainable fuel, why can your road car not be? So that's the background a little bit. Then Howell mentioned the engines. We will be having 50% electric and 50% combustion. We will be needing to compensate for a lack of electric power on every single lap, particularly on the ones with long straights. And I think what we're seeing now, the strategies, it almost adds like a little chess component, you know, where is the driver going to deploy his energy? Who is better prepared? And I think the generation sim driver will be in a good spot here.
That's an interesting point. Do you think it'll favor maybe the younger drivers because that's what they've grown up doing?
Well, the question is, what is younger drivers? You look at George and his generation, Max, they work on the simulator and they enjoy that. It's their generation. So yes, I think whoever loves to be in the virtual world, be it on a rig at home or in a simulator in the factory, is going to have an advantage.
The weight limit is coming down by 30 kilos. How difficult is it to make the weight?
A big, big challenge. You know, that's definitely going to be a challenge, especially early on. You know, every time there's a weight regulation, it's the first few races, you're never quite sure where you are. The PU has a minimum mass, and that is a challenging mass, particularly on the electrical side. It's really the sort of battery and the power electronics that big part of the competition there is to get as close to that minimum mass as you can.
It's the most wonderful time of the year and the perfect season to treat the Formula One fan in your life. The official F1 store has everything you need to make this festive season unforgettable. From teamwear and caps to models and collectibles, you'll find exclusive F1 products and limited edition gear you won't get anywhere else. And the best part, with fast worldwide delivery, you can get your gifts on the grid just in time for Christmas, no pit stops required. Head over to f1store.formula1.com and make this festive season full of speed, style, and F1 spirit.
Okay, only 10 more presents to wrap. You're almost at the finish line. But first, there, the last one. Enjoy a Coca-Cola for a pause that refreshes.
From a PU point of view, what will differentiate the different manufacturers? Is it a question of just how aggressive you've been? And because it's not new technology, is it just who has been the most aggressive?
Well, I think the project was very much of our own building. You know, we created the, as you say, the elements all existed. So you're talking about putting incredible sort of stretch targets on yourself and taking some leaps and doing that, but it was kind of all created by ourselves. It wasn't unlike the fuel where the sport's gone, you've got to do this, it's amazing, go figure. For us, it was more, well, wait a minute, how are we going to pull this together, and what should our targets be, and where should we be investing our cash? Because also at the same time, we've been added into the cost cap or our own PU cost cap. So that's another competitive element that all of a sudden appears. Where advantages come from, I think there's probably three elements, I'd say. Crank power is always going to be, you know, thankfully, we're PU engineers, we love crank power, and that's going to be one of them. I think the efficiency of your electrical system, I think the more efficient you are with your electrical system, the more time you're going to be able to keep it on, and the more time you're going to be able to keep it on means you're going quicker. I think that'll be part of it. But I think the third element, and one which we've kind of touched on already, is how does it all work together? How do you work? How do you make that work together? How do you transiently use all that energy? How do you transiently use the power? How do you interact with the car? You know, completely new car. How do you interact with the driver? You know, the driver's, you know, going to be able to do one straight incredibly quickly if they really want to, but they'll be knackered for the rest of the lap. So they can't do that even if they want to. So that strategic element and working out where you use all of this, I think is there's a big part of that too.
Toto, do you remember you came out with your 400 kph line a couple of months ago, didn't you? That's what you mean. If you deploy everything at the same time, you probably can do that.
Well, I felt like we need to give that engine a little bit of a marketing boost. Yeah. Because people were talking it down, and it's such an amazing piece of kit. So if the track, the FIA was suddenly a little bit worried about, you know, homologation of safety zones of the track, because if you put it all together, we could do 400 or maybe even exceed it, but obviously you're going to run out of energy for the next straight and then not be quick enough.
Are you producing more horsepower in 26 than you have done with the current power unit?
The intention was for it always to be the sort of maximum power to be very approximately the same, and so yeah, I, to be honest with you, I've not done a comparison, but yeah, it's very comparable at the start of Strike.
What chance someone stealing a march on their rivals like you guys did in 2014?
Always possible, definitely always possible. Although the regulation set was put together very much in a way to try and avoid that. So there are some constraints on there that do constrain you to certain ways of doing things. So if that's gone well, less likely that someone's going to have stolen a march. But of course, who's to say how someone hasn't found the loophole, hasn't found the amazing thing that nobody else has?
Can we compare how you feel now on the eve of the new regs compared to how you felt at this stage before 2014? Have you got more confidence in your performance, less confident?
I think what probably wasn't particularly evident in 2014 was just how close we were to disaster. Throughout.
I'm struggling to believe that, no, given that you, what, 16 race wins in 2014?
If you say so. I remember sort of last race of the previous season, through Christmas, we couldn't get an engine on a dyno. We couldn't make it last more than a few hundred kilometres. We were putting them on the dyno in Brackley, and everyone was like, well, how the hell are we going to get to the first race with this? We were really struggling with reliability, with all sorts of things, actually. Even when we went to the first test, I remember vividly being sat in an airport on the way back from the first test. It was Gibraltar Airport with a beer, thinking, bloody hell, we got away with it for that test. What are we going to do for the next test, and what are we going to do for the first race? Because this is getting really real, and we're not in a good place.
And now,
yeah, really similar. I think honestly, there hasn't been a season where in December you're not thinking, we haven't got enough power, we haven't got enough reliability, and the way that we interact everything isn't good enough. We've got 3 months to fix it all. And genuinely, I think perhaps this season was the first year I didn't feel like that with the current PU. But there's generally always been something that catches you out right at the last minute.
You're supplying four teams in 2026. Honda only have one with Aston Martin. Who's in the better place? Honda, because they've got a little bit more flexibility, maybe able to develop a little bit later because they've got to produce fewer power units, or you guys because you're going to have more data and everything that comes with four teams?
It's a million-dollar question. I think, you know, that we've shown in the past that having more than one team, I think you said it earlier in this piece, you know, you're getting more data, you're getting more information, you're getting more, just more kilometres. You just do, because you've got all those cars, you've got four times the engineers all sitting around telling you, no, you can do this better, you can do this more this way, and you can, that is very, very beneficial to have all that coming at you. It doesn't always feel like it, but it definitely is in terms of making a great product. But the flip of that is we've got to make a lot of hardware. We've got to, you know, and we have got to make a few decisions earlier. Not sure making those decisions earlier really hurts you sometimes, because you can run things a bit too close to the wind, I think. That is the flip. And I'm not even sure whether the right place is one team, two teams, three teams, four teams. I'm not sure. There's definitely a sweet spot in there somewhere. And I think it's probably nearer four than one.
So I think where our current mindset is, also discussing with Ola, is that we will reduce the amount of teams we're going to supply in the next cycle. Like Howard said, we don't know whether somewhere the choice is between two and three, I guess. Depends on new regulations going forward. Are they rather simple or not? Or what is it we believe we can learn by supplying more whilst at the same time needing to lock in some designs earlier? I mean, when you consider how many engines do you need to ship to Melbourne? For all of us?
16.
16 engines. You know, if you're Honda on your own, four or five. So that means longer lead times, longer production cycles. So all of that going forward, it's not going to be four anymore.
The paddock rumour mill has you guys down as pre-season favourites for 26. I mean, it's a nice tag to have. Just how confident are you?
Never confident. We are half glass, half empty people, never half full. It starts with the enemy in the house. McLaren has been the better team this year with a Mercedes power unit. So if the power unit were to be superior, which we never say, we never feel entitled to say so, then you got to beat Williams, you got to beat McLaren, and you got to beat Alpine. as a matter of fact. Some of them will have had more development time in the wind tunnel because they've not been placed very well in the Constructor Championship. Some will have come with innovation that maybe we haven't spotted, etc., etc. So you can't take anything for granted, even if our power unit, the Mercedes power unit, was the strongest. And on top of that, you know, these rumor mills are always dangerous because someone somewhere in another team or another power unit manufacturer, fuel supplier will think, well, we like to position you guys in a, you know, favorite role, but we are coming. And that's why we are not being carried away by anything, you know, any gossip that's been discussed at the hairdresser.
Is 3 test sessions enough, A, for your preparations, and B, to give us an idea of the pecking order as we go to Melbourne?
I think it's enough for our preparation. And, you know, there's been a lot of investment over the years, you know, in dynos, in the way that we run in the factory, even, you know, virtual running and to get yourself prepared. Yeah, you know, getting that first test will be important to just shake it all down because there's so much interaction, so much new car, tyres, everything. So I think that's probably long enough to keep us going. And I mean, pecking order, as I said to you previously, we never think we've got enough power, we never think we've got reliability, and we never think we're the best at putting that down on the track. If you always think you're a bit behind and you're always pushing to get that extra bit, I don't think that's any bad thing. And honestly, you know, quite frankly, I don't know how much power we're going to get to the first race, so God knows how the rest of the paddock knows what we're getting there.
Now, if the car is good enough, Toto, is George ready to win a world title?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Nothing more to add to that.
And how long until Kimi's at his peak? Or do you think he can challenge in 2026 as well?
19. Peak. When do we expect him to peak? 3-5 years from now. That's the time we need to give him.
How much doesn't he know about this wonderful sport?
I think he knows a lot about this sport because that's what he lives and breathes every day. But there is the human component that you need to mature as a young man, cope with the dynamics and pressure of this environment. But I'm in no doubt that this is going in the right direction.
Okay, well, guys, it's been a wonderful chat. Thank you both very much. Can I just end this with a memory from each of you from the last 75 years of Formula One? That is what the sport has been celebrating in 2025. Just a moment from each of you. I think I've got an idea what Toto might say.
What would that be?
2014 Austria is what I thought you might say.
It's Mercedes 1 and 2, and they're back doing what they've been doing all season long, and it's Rosberg, the championship leader, who comes home to win the Austrian Grand Prix. Hamilton's charge takes second place ahead of Valtteri Bottas for Williams, who finishes on the podium. Massa, the pole sitter, finishes fourth.
That was a moment where I was just came from Williams and was still shareholder, and we did 1, 2, 3, 4. And I went, took my car back home to Vienna, which was the route I did when I was an instructor in Spielberg, and literally with no money to pay for the fuel. And then 2014, God knows how many years later, I find myself in this position. I need to pinch myself about this still every day. But there's many great moments and memories that we had over the last, you know, 15 years together, and that we are so blessed to be in this sport, you know, playing around with racing cars, entertaining, innovating. Fantastic.
Memory from you?
If it's a purely personal memory, I remember arriving at the track on a Friday morning. It was somewhere in the Middle East. I can't remember exactly where. Nicky was there. Of course, Nicky was always there before anybody else.
Before the cleaners.
Before the cleaners.
No, the cleaners were there, but Horsby, there was nobody from catering.
Yeah. And he was sat outside, and I hadn't seen him for a little while, and I walked up, and he jumped out of his chair, and he came towards me, and he said, "Ah, maestro," and gave me a massive bear hug. I will remember that.
Well, Maestro, thank you very much for your time. Toto, thank you too.
Thank you.
A maestro indeed. And I remember Toto's grin below the podium after his remarkable Mercedes Williams 1-2-3-4 in Austria 2014. It really was an incredible day for him. Well, what a fascinating chat. It's the first time I've had an in-depth conversation about how the 26 regs will impact the PU and the fuel. And you can sense the nervousness among the Mercedes top brass, can't you?
Have they stolen a march on the field like they did back in 2014? There's not long to wait until we'll find out who's got it right and who's got it wrong. And if Mercedes have got it right, then we're sure to get a very intense battle between them and their customer teams. Or as Toto referred to McLaren in this chat, the enemy in the house. Guys, many thanks for your time. Enjoy the short winter and we'll see you in Melbourne to find out who's on pole and who will win the first race of 2026. Well, that's almost it for this week. Don't forget to check out F1's other official podcasts, F1 Nation's review of Lando Norris winning his first world championship in Abu Dhabi is out now. Lando's race engineer, Will Joseph, joins us to reflect on how they turned their season around to finish on top. And on this week's F1 Explains, the team puts your questions to James Vowles about how the 2026 rule changes make this winter break a very different one for the teams. That's out on Friday. Just search for F1 Nation and F1 Explains on your podcast app. Well, that's almost it for this year, but I will be back with the best of Beyond the Grid in 2025 next week, so make sure you don't miss that. For now, though, thank you very much for listening. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
At Penn Station East Coast Subs, your ears may hear, and your craving deep down inside hears.
Penn Station's cheesesteak is grilled to order with 100% USDA choice steak and sautéed veggies. Piled high on that legendary bread, topped with aged provolone and served melty and hot straight from the oven.
So when you hear, your craving knows.
Time for Penn Station, and don't forget the fresh-cut fries.
Penn Station.
Love your sub.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello!
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.